I'm also an alcoholic. From Charlottesville, Virginia. Got a home group. It's a common solution. Meets on Hinton Avenue Thursday nights, 7:30. And we'd love to have you. I do have a sponsor. And my sobriety date is September 19th, 2005. And, I was born to a single mom and a blue-collar family. I mean, you know, hardworking, very independent people. And, you know, I remember at an early age wanting to fit in with everybody, wanting to be noticed by the adults and by the cousins. And, you know, it didn't really matter what it was for. It just, I guess, alcoholic, self-centered to the extreme, I wanted to be kind of in the middle of everything. And, I started at a young age stealing and lying and manipulating to get what I wanted. And I remember, you know, we lived out in the country, and all the adults, you know, they were chewing tobacco or dipping. And so, that's what I was stealing from the stores. We'd go to a little corner store gas station, and I'd pocket a whole bunch of the dip. And ride on the back of the truck, you know, going home and sucking on it. And I remember I hid a lot of things from my family, you know, and I don't know why. I guess that's just this kind of my natural instincts is to hide from everybody. And my initial reaction was to lie. You know, I remember I stole some of my mom's cigarettes. I was about 7 years old. A buddy of mine was over and just experimenting, you know. And took some, and God, it was 8:30 in the morning. Come back in the house, and mom goes, "Austin, have you been smoking?" I said, "No, I don't know what you're talking about." And that kind of sums up a lot for me that, as far as behavior. As I was growing up, about 9 years old or so, I had my first drink of alcohol. And it's kind of funny because there are two different instances that I like to say, you know, first times I drank. And it's kind of weird to say that, but we're living with an aunt and uncle of mine, and they would have these horseshoe parties. And every Friday night, you know, in the backyard throwing horseshoes. And everybody was drinking. Everybody seemed like they were having a good time, laughing, joking. And one night, it was probably about 11:30, 12. To me, it was late. I mean, it was probably later than that. Everybody was in bed. And we were living in the basement. And I snuck into the kitchen, and there was two beers. There was a Budweiser and a Bud Light. And I grabbed them both. I went and sat in the recliner. And and I opened the Budweiser and took a sip out of it. And I thought it was the nastiest thing I'd ever tasted in my life. So I set it down, and I opened the Bud Light, and I enjoyed that. I drank it all, and then I went to bed. And I think the whole thing that spurred that was just wanting to be like the adults, wanting to be a part of that I guess joyousness that I saw, you know, just the fun. And a little bit of time went on. My mom wound up getting married, and me and my stepdad went to a football game. It was just a high school game, and he said, "Austin," he said, "I got something for you," and you know, because I would take sips of the beer and stuff. And I said, "Yeah, what's that?" And he gave me a Bud Light. And I finished that rather quickly. And he said, "Well, if you want another one, open the window," because we're in a little Toyota pickup truck, two-door. He said, "Open the window and back in the truck and grab one out the cooler." And so the whole way to the football game, that's what I was doing. And I don't remember. It probably wasn't anything but a 12-pack or so. And I remember throwing some on my shirt, and he goes, "Well, when we get home, go straight to bed." He goes, "I don't want your mom to smell you or anything. Just get in the bed." And that's what I did. And he's my best friend because of it. At about 14, we had moved to Charlottesville. There, my mom had a divorce and remarried in the interim. And I had a cousin from Fredericksburg come down, and he has a couple brothers, but usually it's just him by himself. He comes down for a week in the summer when we were younger. And I don't know where the idea came from. I said, Adam, I'm going to get something to drink. Do you want anything? I mean, it's late. Everybody's in bed. We're playing a video game. And nothing to do with drinking. And he said, no, I'm fine. And so I went in there, and I get great ideas. I've never seen this done before, but I started mixing Kool-Aid and vodka. And, you know, take a shot or two vodka, and then, you know, in a 16-ounce glass, and fill the rest of it up with Kool-Aid. Well, about three or four of those, and you know, I'm mixing other things and experimenting, blah, blah, blah. To the end of the night, I was just drinking straight tequila, just, you know, out of the bottle. And I was having a blast. It was the first time that I really drank the way I wanted to. And I didn't know it at the time. I really thought that I was just experimenting. The next morning I was sick. I was disgusted of it. I didn't want anything to do with it. But that night, something happened. And I got to say that because, you know, I fell off the top of a bunk bed twice. I wound up throwing up all over him. You know, I was laying on my back on the top of this bunk bed. And I would roll to one side, throw up. I would pass out. I would wake up. I'd roll over to the other side, throw up, and I'd go back to sleep. And it was just, it was that off and on. And my mom finally wound up calling me in a room, and she said, Austin, what's going on? I said, nothing. She said, it's late. She said, it's late. Y'all need to get in bed. And I said, all right. And we stumbled back in the bedroom and and went to sleep. But even though I was disgusted with the feeling of, you know, just throwing up and being sick and you know, all the stuff that comes along with drinking too much, I enjoyed it. And I think deep down, you know, it's what makes an alcoholic. It's what makes an alcoholic is I couldn't wait to do that again. And a little bit of time passed, and I started hanging out with older people, and you know, they weren't quite drinking age, but they still knew the stores that you could go to and get alcohol and stuff. You didn't have to be 21. And I would go in and out of these stores. And again, I was drinking the way I wanted to. And I wasn't hiding it at all. I mean, I thought I was. I was lying about it. You know, if you asked me how much I had to drink, you know, I might tell you a couple, but it was going to be a lie. But I remember trying to get my friends to drink with me, and you know, at first they were really hesitant about it. But okay, you can be hesitant, but I'm gonna drink. And it came a point where I was, you know, my mom and my stepdad would go to sleep. I would sneak in the kitchen. I would get the car keys, and I would get my mom's debit card. I would go to the bank, withdraw $20. The big thing, I would drink 40s. I would drink 40s of Hurricane. Nasty as, ugh. But, I mean, they were like $1.50, $1.65. And, you know, $20, I could get four or five. And, you know, I would only wind up drinking two and wind up throwing out and then passing out. And there were some other issues involved as well. But, and I loved it. I mean, that's what I live for is, you know, 10 o'clock, everybody goes to bed, wait about an hour, hour and a half, because the store wasn't but 5 minutes down the road, make sure everybody's asleep, and steal money, steal the car, go get alcohol. We had the sunroom, and there was a couple plants in there, but there was a coffee table and a sofa, and that's all I needed. And I would sit there till early morning and drink. I don't know when it happened. You know, it was sometime, I was 14 or 15, and you know, just like all my other good ideas, I started taking shots of vodka in the morning before I went to school. And, you know, 4 or 5 or 6. I mean, until I got a nice buzz, and then I would get on the school bus, I would go to school. And then it kept growing from there. You know, I started to skip out about lunchtime, come home, and the rest of the day was devoted to drinking. And I remember one night I had, I stole the car, I had come back to the house and I had beer in the car. And my mom was standing on the front porch. And it's closing in on 12, and this is something that's not supposed to happen. And so I circled around the block, and I went to the neighbor's house. I parked there. We had this fence, and I put the beer right at the back fence. And next morning I woke up, and, you know, I had the drinks in the morning. I went to school, came out at lunchtime, it was warm, got this hot beer, and started drinking it. And, you know, and that's why I say, I don't understand how non-alcoholics say they enjoy the taste of beer, because it was not about the taste. It wasn't about tasting anything. It was about getting drunk and staying that way. And that's what I wanted. I didn't care who I hurt or what I did in the process to get alcohol. It was the fact that I had it. And anyway, I wound up getting arrested at the age of 16 for grand larceny. And I went to this wilderness program. And while I was there, the owner of it, or one of the owners, is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's been in the program for 20, 21 years now, I think. And at the time, you know, I was asking a lot of questions. I mean, I didn't really understand Alcoholics Anonymous. I had kind of been introduced to it, I guess, it was about somewhere between 14 and 15, because I had gotten into a lot of trouble when I was younger. But I had to go to this outpatient rehab thing before I got arrested, and two completely separate issues. But in order to get out of this program, you had to go to AA or NA meetings. And that's what I did. I mean, but I wanted to drink. I didn't know what the heck they were talking about. And I mean, I was getting in trouble at 12 years old for having marijuana at school. And, you know, stuff like that is what really wound up happening. I finally got expelled, went to the outpatient program. A year or so later, I got arrested for stealing something. And I was kind of interested in what this guy had to say about Alcoholics Anonymous, because, you know, I had more or less come to the idea that I had, you know, some sort of issues with drinking. I mean, I was always the one getting in trouble. I was always, you know, the one having these things happen as a consequence of my drinking. And it seemed like nobody else was. And so I listened to what he had to say, and I got interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. I came home April 27th of 2005. I was there for 2 years, and from I was 16 until I was a little bit older than 18. I can't remember, but and I tried Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I shouldn't say I tried it. I showed up. I used it more as a social event. I kind of hung out. I talked to people. I even had a sponsor. I called him. I got up to step 5. Did it dishonestly. I kind of told him the things that I thought he wanted to hear. And then I was out the door. And what had happened was I started going back to school. I was going to a community college. I ran into one of my old friends, and he said, "Well, why don't you come over?" He said, "You know, there's not a lot going on. We're just hanging out, having a good time. Come over for a little while." And I said, "Okay, well, as long as so long as not everybody's drinking and kind of just being clowns. Because, as I back up a little bit, when I first came home, between April and it was June or July of 05, you know, when I had a sponsor, I kind of did a dishonest fist step. That whole time, I was scared of alcohol. I was scared to be around it. I was scared to see it. And it was something that, that we had a liquor cabinet in one room. I would go around this room to get into the kitchen just because, it terrified me. And I wound up going over to this friend's house, and everybody's drinking and doing what we used to do. And I said, I wanted some. And another friend of mine said, Austin, you've come really far. He goes, you need to go home. He goes, you've had a lot going on, and I don't know if it would be the best thing for you. And I honestly told him I appreciate that, and thanks for kind of watching me. I said, he was one of my best friends growing up, and I went home. I came back the next night and started drinking. I made the decision to say screw everything and drank. And let me see. 3 months later, I got arrested again. But and that's what happens. For some reason, when I drink, that's just where I go. I do stupid things, and I get arrested. But before that, I tried to hide my drinking for 2 weeks from my mom. I was still living at home, and I got the idea that maybe she knew what was going on, so I told her, it's been nice. I'm 18 years old. I need to be out on my own. And that's what I did. I moved out, got an apartment with a couple buddies of mine, and I really, that's when I really started to party like I wanted to, and all bets were off at this point. I had a job at a restaurant. I kept that for about a week, and I had other ideas of how to make money, and it was just, I could just watch my life just go downhill. Finally, we got an idea that our apartment was being watched. So I left the apartment, and I went and lived with my mom. And she said, Austin, she said, I know what you've been doing, and, we spent a lot of time and money in helping you. And she goes, I'll tell you what, you can come stay with me, but you need to have a job within a week. And if you don't, you need to leave. Well, being an alcoholic, I made that week turn into 4 weeks before she said, you're not doing anything. You need to get out of my house. And that was the first time I greeted my mom with very kind words. I told her, F you, and I left. And that was the first time I had cussed at my mom like that. I'd always respected her. I always saw how hard she worked. And I just flat out told her, F off. And I left. I packed all my clothes up, threw it in the back of my car, and was going from friend's house to friend's house. And they even said, Austin, it's been nice having you here, but, I don't know what you did, what happened, but you need to straighten it out. It's pretty much, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here type of deal. And that's what was going on. But I should say, my morals, from seeing my mom work her tail off to put food on the table, and knowing that, if you want anything in life, you need to work for it. From having that impression, I went directly to stealing things out of people's cars at about 2:30 in the morning and claim, well, I'm going to pay this back rent that I have, and I'm going to straighten these things out. And blah, blah, lies, 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 lies. I wound up, taking money and things out of people's cars, selling what I could and buying alcohol with it. And the only reason that I was eating at the time was because I had friends that were working at McDonald's. I would go by McDonald's. It was pretty late at night. They'd give me a cheeseburger and a thing of fries, and I'd be on my way. And I knew something was wrong with that picture. I knew that something wasn't right. And, you know, but there's nothing, you know, an alcoholic that's doing that. You know, I mean, I speak for me. I knew there was a problem, but I wasn't done drinking. And it didn't matter what anybody said to me. I was going to continue doing what I was doing. I was in this decent relationship prior to this. You know, it went on for some time, and a nice lady came to me, and she said, "Austin," she said, "you can either have this lifestyle that you want to have, or you know, you can be with me." And I respected her. I mean, I absolutely loved her. I couldn't answer. I couldn't say anything to her. And we stood in this parking lot for about an hour and a half, and she was crying on my shoulder. And, it took a couple of weeks before I realized that I actually wanted to stop drinking. But, you know, there was nothing that I could do about it. I mean, you know, I was praying about it. And I ran into some friends from AA when I was previously kind of hanging around. And I don't know if it was the guilt, the shame, or what it was, but I couldn't go into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I lost touch with this girl, and she called me up one day, and she said, "Austin, why don't you come over?" She goes, "I just want to see you. I want to talk to you. I want to make sure you're doing all right." And so I planned to go over there. I went over and saw her. And I told her what was going on. I told her honestly what was going on, and the fact was that I knew I had a problem with drinking, and I knew I couldn't stop drinking. And I don't know, you know, what I'm supposed to do about it. I also told her that I don't know when, but I know I'm going back to jail. And that was, it was strange, but that's just what I was feeling. The next night I wound up getting arrested, and for two counts of grand larceny. I also got assault and battery on a cop in the process, and it was back into the normal thing. But the difference was from being a kid and getting in trouble, you know, and kind of holding it as a pride and, you know, well, guess what I did type of thing. I was so tired mentally and physically, I was glad to be in jail. I was glad to have the opportunity to sleep and just say, because everything up until that point, it was just spinning. I mean, I couldn't tell you which way was straight. You know, my family had made it very clear that if you get in trouble like that again, that we don't want to hear from you. We don't want nothing to do with you. We've given you plenty of chances up until now, and you can't seem to get your act together, so you're on your own. And I don't know where I got the courage from. I wound up calling my grandparents. Oh, it's good to fall back on. And we talked, and they put money up for bail and everything, and they helped me out. My mom didn't want to talk to me. She didn't want to be around me. And I remember probably a weekend, you know, right, because I got arrested, and I was in jail 2 weeks before I got bond. But a week after I was arrested, my mom came, which was unexpected. And my grandparents told her where I was, what was going on. And she walked into the visiting booth and just crying. I mean, just hysterically crying. I looked at her for, you know, a matter of 10 seconds. I started to do the same thing because it was just this, I know I did it again. But this time I can't lie about it. This time, you know, there's nothing, there's not another lie I can tell that's going to make this right. because I had been doing it. I mean, she heard every one of them. And I know that this lady was absolutely tired and fed up of what I was doing. But not only that, she wanted a better life for her son than what she had. And that's it. That's all she wanted. And it made sense, and it also made sense that, you know, it's not that she doesn't love me and she doesn't care for me and she don't want me around. It's the fact that I'm screwing up and I'm pissing away the opportunities that she's trying to give me. And, you know, once I started crying, I stood there for about, you know, 20 seconds or so. I mean, it was less than a minute, and I told her, I can't do this anymore, so maybe you should go home, and I'll see you later. And went back into the jail, and I didn't talk to her until I got bond. And I didn't really have much to say. I mean, you know, she didn't have much to say either, but I was at a point where I was ready to accept help. Because, you know, it was, once I kind of got consciousness again when I was in jail, I realized that this is not what I want for myself. This is not how I want to live. This is not how I want to treat people. These are not the type of things that I want to be doing. And, you know, I hit my knees and I asked for help. I mean, honestly asked for help. And it was the first time I'd ever done that. When I got out on bond, the first day I went to a meeting, I went back down to Buckingham, Virginia. That's where I was hanging out around Alcoholics Anonymous the first time. And my grand sponsor was actually the owner of the wilderness program that I went to. And I didn't know this at the time. I didn't know he was going to be my grand sponsor. But he said, well, are you done? I said, yeah. He said, do you want help? And I said, yeah. He said, well, go talk to this guy. And he pointed me to my still current sponsor. And, you know, we got together, and it wasn't 2 weeks went by. We started going through the steps. And because the first week he wanted to talk, make sure I was on the same page as he was. The second week we sat down on the stairs of a church and did the first three steps. And mainly what that consisted of, he asked me if I was done drinking. And he asked me if I thought I could control my drinking. And I remember this whole time, you know, I was upset, I was mad, I was kind of just full of, I mean, ugh. And, but I was laughing, you know, because he was asking to me these stupid questions. What do you mean, do you think I can control my drinking, you know? And he said, well, I want you to think about this. And he gave me one of the I don't know what to call it, one of the lines out of the book where, you know, he goes, well, if you went to a bar and sat down and had two drinks a night for 6 months, or no, he didn't say, he said if you had two drinks a night for like 6 weeks or something, and you stopped altogether, do you think you could stay sober for the rest of the year or for the next year? I said no. I said, you know, once I had two drinks, you know, that's it. I'm going to keep drinking. I said, you know, it doesn't make much sense how somebody is going to have two drinks and stop. And and he said, okay. And we talked about, you know, what had been going on. And he said, well, do you think that there's a power greater than you that can help you? I mean, do you even think there is? I said, well, yeah. I said, you know, I had been praying before I got arrested, before I came back in Alcoholics Anonymous, that God would help me. And I said, you know, my great-grandmother, when she was still alive, you know, I was young, 4 or 5, I said I would go to church with her. And, you know, I kind of had this sense of a power greater than myself. I, you know, wasn't sure I would put a religion on it or anything, but I knew there was something bigger than me. And he said, okay. He goes, well, are you willing to how did he put it? are you willing to turn your life over to the care of God? And I said, well, you know, when I tried to get sober last time, I wasn't sure what that meant. And I told him I had been thinking about that for a while, and said, I don't know how you're supposed to do that. What do you mean, turn your life over to the care of God? And he goes, well, I tell you, as simple as I can put it, all that means is we're going to go through the rest of the steps. I said, well, yeah, I can do that. I mean, that's not hard. And we left. He said, well, right before we left, he said, well, how about you read the book? Well, read the pages dealing with the fourth step. I can't remember the page numbers. And he said, well, why don't you start writing your fourth step? If you have any questions, call me. He goes, but try to have it done in a week. And I said, all right, I'll see what I can do. Went home, and I was actually staying with my grandparents at the time. I went to the house, and that's what I started doing. I read the pages. I called him that night. I had a whole bunch of questions for him. He made it clear what I needed to do, and I started writing my fourth step. And that whole time, that week I was supposed to be writing my fourth step, I started working with my uncle. He's a general contractor. I would go out work with him. And I would come home at night, and I would tell myself, well, regardless of how long you sit down and write your fourth step, you know, it's either a life or death situation. And if you want to go back to what you were doing, then you don't have to write it. If you want to do something different, then write your fourth step. And that's a conversation I have with myself every night. And, you know, when I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first time in, the second time, you know, I'd always heard honesty. You know, you need to be honest. Well, I took that as you need to tell people around you how and when they make you mad. And I was, you know, that coupled with all these resentments and feelings of fear and frustration and guilt coming back from right before 7, I was a pain to be around. And then that's put very nicely. But I called him up and I said, well, I'm not going to have it done this week like you asked. Is there any way I can have a little bit more time? And I called him on Friday. He said, well, we have it done by Tuesday. And I said, yeah, I can do that. And that's what happened. And that's what we're meeting up every Tuesday. And so we met again on the Tuesday I had it done. And excuse me, it was a Monday I had it done. And to do my fifth step, he said, awesome. He said, well, why don't we go ahead and talk about the big ones first? He goes, I know you don't want to talk about them. I said, all right. And I kind of sat there for a few minutes. And I remember trying to warm up to him. And you know, I guess what I was trying to do is to try to get acceptance from him to know that, you know, he won't think any differently of me after I tell him this stuff. And he goes, why don't you just tell me what you did? And I told him a couple things, and he kind of shrugged his shoulders and laughed, and he goes, is that all? And I go, yeah. And he goes, those are the big things. And he goes, you know, I've done some of those same things myself. And he goes, there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous that have done 10 times worse than that. And he goes, you know, you're not so different from everybody. And we kept going on with the fifth step, and I finally finished, and it didn't take long. I mean, maybe an hour, 45 minutes, something like that. And it was just this sigh of relief. You know, when I was younger, wanting to be like everybody, wanting to fit in, always feeling that I was different. I mean, you know, my hands are a big example. I always felt like I had something to prove to people. And that was the first time that I wasn't necessarily worried about that stuff, because I knew I was just like everybody else. And we went to a meeting afterwards, and went home. I prayed. I did, you know, 6th or 7th step while I was sitting. You know, a book asks you sit for 1 hour and review what you've done and the first 5 proposals. And and ask God, you know, be entirely ready and willing to remove these defects of character. Well, that hour lasted for about 15 minutes before I fell asleep, and I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, you know, I was just glad to be doing something in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was glad to feel like, you know, I mean, like I said, for the first time, I felt like I was equal to the people around me. And we got together once again and viewed my eighth step, which was, I was told, was just my fourth step. And he said there may be some things on there that you may not need to do as far as amends. And he goes, there may be some things that aren't on there that you may need to make amends for. And, you know, this is why I think sponsorship is critical, because I went to him and some of the biggest things I thought I needed to make amends to were the people that I had ripped off, you know, and outside of the family, you know, drug-related wise and things like that. You know, I thought, well heck, I need to pay these people back. And he laughs and he goes, no, those are the ones you don't need to worry about, you know. Those are the ones where the people are still doing the same exact thing that you were doing. Do you think they really care if you come back and pay them money or not? And I said, you know, I didn't think of it that way. He goes, well, this is what you're going to do. And he pointed out things that I was going to do in the immediate future with men's. And he goes, well, you're going home tonight. He goes, why don't you call your mom and make an appointment to go see her? And there was another big one. There was an employer. The restaurant that I worked for, and he goes, well, why don't you make amends to them too? Call me once you do them and tell me how it went. And I made an appointment to see my mom. And one weekend I was going to go up there. And I figured I would go to the restaurant while I was in town. And I called him right before I went, and I said, I don't really know how this is going to go. I don't know what I'm doing. He goes, well, why don't you pray about it and ask for help? And that's what I did. And the first amends I actually went to make was for this restaurant that I used to work for. Right before I quit, I was stealing a whole bunch of beer, and I was stealing steaks and all kinds of food from him. But the catch of it was is that he was a good friend of the family. That's how I got the job. And he went to high school with my mom. You know, they were been friends ever since. And he was a respectable guy. I went to him and I asked him if I could have a few minutes of his time. He said, yeah, give me a second. He goes, why don't you stay at the bar and you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's lunchtime. There's nobody in there. I go sit down, and he goes, what's going on? And I said, well, you know, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to get sober. I just want to make amends to you. And I was really... I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea what I was doing. But I had told him, you know, what I thought I had done to harm him, and asked him, you know, if there was anything else that I had done to harm him. And that was, this was the first time where I actually got a good look at how I was acting. Because he said, Austin, he said, you know, I'm not mad at you. He goes, I'm more or less disappointed. He goes, I know you're a much better person than what you were acting like. He goes, but the person you really hurt is your mom, you know. And he said that all she wanted for you was a good life. And she was doling out opportunities for you to better yourself. You know, at one point, he goes, she used to be full of energy. She was charismatic. She was outgoing. She was a fun person to be around. He goes, when I look at her now, she's just a shell. He goes, you've taken everything from that woman. And it made me think. You know, I always heard that what I did was only affecting me. You know, my mom always told me when I was growing up, well, the only person you're hurting by dropping out of school or by doing this or by doing that is yourself. You can fail out. You can get arrested to do it. Go ahead. She's like, I don't care. But it was at that time where that kind of outside figure told me exactly what I was doing. It made sense. I kind of see the ripples in the pond. you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm selfish. I mean, you know, when somebody says it's not harming them, all right, I'm going to keep on doing it. But, and that night I went, I made amends to my mom and my stepdad as well. And she goes, "Austin, you know, I can't say she believed what I was saying or what. I'm pretty sure she didn't. I mean, I had done it once before already." She said, "Well, all I want for you to, is to do better." And she said, "There's nothing you can do to make it right. And besides, you know, acting like it." And that's how I took it. You know, I started to step things up when I was around her and try to do things that I saw she needed to be done. Funny point, when I was making amends to the guy at the restaurant, the owner of the restaurant, asked him how I could make it right. He goes, "Well, what do you think you stole from me?" I said, "I don't know, a couple $100. And he goes, "Well, do you think you can pay me back?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "You got any idea when you can pay me?" I said, "Well, I'll bring you money this afternoon." He goes, I want work money. I don't want any money that's stolen." And I said, no, I can bring the pay stub. I can show you I work for it." And he goes, "Okay." And I took the money up to him. And I remember seeing his face, you know, because it was almost like it was surreal. Because it was just funny. I mean, just the fact that he made that comment about, you know, I don't want it to be any stolen money. I want it to be something you actually work for. It caught me off guard. But anyway, you know, I made amends to the rest of the family and realized I had a lot of financial amends to make. And they didn't get put on the back burner. They got set... I hate to say this. They kind of got set to the side because I thought that if I couldn't come up with that money right away, that there was no way I could make amends to them. And I talked to my sponsor, and he said, "That's not the truth at all." He goes, "You know, you call them up, you ask if you can have a meeting with them. You tell them, just like you did everybody else, what you did to harm them. You know, are there any ways that you don't know about that you harmed them? And ask them how you can make it right." He goes, "If you're honest with them and tell them that you don't have that much money right now and that you can't afford to just give them a check, they'll be willing to work with you and set you up on a payment plan." And so that's what I did, and still paying people. But Once I started my amends and we were talking, and my sponsor was talking about 10, 11, and 12, and he told me, just plain and simple, "Austin, you know, throughout your day, you know, if you make a mistake, you know, go back as quick as you can and make it right." And, you know, and that pretty much covers step 10. I mean, look for, you know, my shortcomings as far as substance, self-centeredness, resentment and fear, and that's something I try to do today is go back to people, because it's not always easy to set aside pride and, you know, want to play the blame game and who's right and all that stuff. I mean, I still want to do that today, but I notice that I'm wrong. I realize that I'm wrong, and Alcoholics Anonymous gives me, you know, step 10 to deal with that. And, you know, step 11, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it wasn't something that was hard for me to practice. Because I should say, by the time I got my amends in motion, I had to go back and serve my jail sentence. And, that was 14 or 16 months. I think it was around 14. And, you know, when you're in jail, it's pretty easy to get up in the morning and pray and pray at night before you go to bed. And today, that's something I try to practice because, you know, I have, you know, still, like I said, with the ninth step, I had no idea what I was doing. And today, I still don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea. You know, I pray that I can be helpful and useful, and especially to the alcoholic. And that's all I could do, you know. That's it. And step 12, you know, I have a commitment in my home group. I make coffee there. And I get there early. I reach out my hand. I stay a little late and talk to people. And I try to be honest with people, you know, that I'm close to. And, you know, I had this instance. It was, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. It was a buddy of mine I was talking to in Charlottesville, and had some stuff going on, and I was being honest with him. And another guy kind of came up and stood beside him. And I had no idea what, you know, if he needed something. And he goes, I asked him, he goes, no, I'm just listening. I said, okay. 2 days later, he comes to me, he says, Austin, he goes, what you were talking about the other night really helped me because my sister was having the same situation. And it's, you know, it's weird. I mean, that's really the only thing I've had happen like that. But the point of it is that I don't know when or how I'm going to be useful to another alcoholic. And, you know, or to anybody, period. The point of Alcoholics Anonymous, and like I said, you know, the point for me is to stay sober and try to help another alcoholic. And, you know, as I've been granted a lot because of sobriety. You know, there are a lot of times where, you know, I actually live 40 minutes south of Charlottesville. And, I mean, it's a beautiful drive. And, you know, a lot of times I can't help but to think the stuff that I have in my life today is like a loaner. You know, God is loaning me this stuff, you know. And, you know, I can't take, I do, but, you know, I can't take but so much pride in it, you know. And I don't deserve it. I mean, it's plain and simple. I don't deserve to be where I'm at today, you know. And that's not a pessimistic view. That's just a view of, you know, when I was going to court the last time, you know, I was facing 40 years. And, you know, I'm blessed in many different ways. You know, I started a business in June. Just moved back to the area. I was actually me and Erica, the lady I was talking about earlier in the story. You know, we just moved back from Richmond. I passed up that relationship. My family, you know, I can't sit here and say that they trust me or they just hope I keep doing what I'm doing or what. I don't know what their motives are. But they seem like they trust me. They act like they trust me. They don't seem hurt by the things that I do today. And, you know, I spend time with my little cousins. And I can tell that they enjoy it. I can actually be there today, is what I'm trying to get to. I can be present. And that's not something I could have done before. I remember, backtracked a couple of years, when I had that apartment, my grandparents had called me and asked me to come down. And I don't know why this is, but my grandparents were the only people that I couldn't get sloppy drunk in front of. I couldn't be sloppy drunk in front of them. Beyond me. But they said, you know, we want to have lunch with you. We know what's going, well, we know that you're not doing too well, and, you know, we just want to check on you. So I drove down for lunch, and I remember I just could not wait to leave so I could drink again. I just could not wait to leave. I stayed for 30 minutes. I ate. I said hi, bye. That was pretty much it. I got drunk on the way home. But, you know, I'm not sure where I was going with that, but to see my grandparents today, I mean, they're in their 60s and think they're in their 90s, but you know, to be able to be a part of their lives today, you know, that means a lot to me. Because when I was in jail, I finally got work release. My grandfather, he was the one to come pick me up every morning and take me to work. And, you know, I don't know. You know, I can't ask for more than what I have. There are a lot of times where I do, and, you know, something bad will happen, and I realize what's going on, but I have a great life today because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was willing to take directions from somebody else, you know, and before that point, I thought I was the one giving directions. Yeah, go figure, I'm in jail. But you know, I don't know. I owe everything today to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to say, Billy, thanks for asking me to come up here and share. You know, it's an honor doing anything. Yeah, I appreciate it.